Good evening and welcome to Trevor's Monthly Gardening Diary. It is now the month of May and Trevor will be giving you information about last month, what he managed to do in his garden in April and what he plans to do for his garden in May. Now, the weather has been absolutely atrocious. It has affected my garden in as much as this year, for the first time in the 18 years I've lived at Hartford Marina, I had frost on my hydrangeas. And I think this was probably due to the warm weather we had, the unseasonal warm weather we had in March, which brought out the buds. And then the frost came, which burnt them all, I'm afraid. But never mind, they seem to be getting through it now. And of course, weeding. With no rain, it's been pretty bad for the birds' poo-poo, which has been all over my boat, all over my decking, and having to clear that up. But with the rain we had recently, it has washed it all away, I'm glad to say. So let's see what Trevor's doing now. Good evening, Trevor, and how are you this evening?
Good evening, Sue. Very well indeed. Very well, especially after having all the rain.
Yes, we definitely did need this. What happened with regard to your advice from April? Did you manage to cover all of that?
I think I did. Yes, indeed so. You were commenting on the temperatures and the lack of rain, to which that has been addressed somewhat today. And that was one of the main problems, was the frost, in as much that we couldn't get as many things into the ground as one wanted in the time frame. But it has a way of catching up. Crops will catch up. And now that some of them have caught up, they're getting nipped, as you rightly said again, by Jack Frost, which is a bit annoying, but you have to take precautions against it as far as possible. So if we go through April, got the shading paint onto the greenhouse, which, if you recall, certain parts of the month has been pretty warm. The levels of sun coming through is quite high, so it was important to get that on. Some of it has been covered by birds again, but fortunately it is white, so it does camouflage itself in. So we've got both the greenhouses done. And we've erected the pea structure. In fact, I erected two because I had some plants left over. So I did a diddy one. Whether they'll just give me some smaller peas, I don't know. But we've erected the structure, applied fertilizer to it, and latterly, I've actually got the pea plants into the ground. There's a lot of plants that have been gone from small beginnings to be repotted. They're still in the greenhouse, because what you can't do is put things out too soon. And that is one of our problems, is the sun's out, the sky's blue, and we think, let's get on with gardening. But it really is down to the temperatures at night. It's a false economy. And plants will catch up during May, so we look forward to that. We repotted tomatoes, cucumbers, and nasturtiums. Now, I had an abundance of tomatoes this year. I grew 4 different varieties just to cover myself, and quite a few of each. So when it got to a certain stage of repotting them on, I decided there and then that 8 would be sufficient, and handed out a few to my neighbours. And that's what you do in neighbours' gardens. Someone grows too much of one thing, you grow too much of another, and it's good to swap experiences and indeed plants. The early April first sowing of radishes, spring onion and carrots. You start in small rows, and when they start appearing, you probably think about your successional growing and putting another row in. Radishes come up very quickly. Parsnips, they won't be up until, well, probably another month's time, but that's the way the crops grow. Potatoes, I did put my first earlies in, which was in tubs, as I think I mentioned last month. The second earlies, which went in a lot later, they're now emerging and they're in rows in the garden. And it's okay at the start of their emergence because you can cover them up each night with some compost or draw soil over. When they get a bit bigger, it becomes a little bit more difficult. So plan B has to come into play, which is horticultural fleece. And what I've done is to put metal rings over the rows and then drape horticultural fleece over the top, not wanting to touch any of the foliage with the fleece if at all possible. That is what is recommended. Try to avoid touching the plants with the coverings. A lot of people I know actually cover it with carpets, plastic, you name it, they cover it with it, providing they've got a gap that it's not touching, it should do the trick. The main thing to remember is to, as soon as the frost has gone in the morning, take it off, let the air get to the plant. Potatoes will recover from a little frost. What you do not want is a lot of frost. We have to take the bull by the horns, and it's a lot of hard work in the evenings. It's easy throwing fleece over in the greenhouse, not over the greenhouse, but over the plants in the greenhouse. But it becomes more difficult outside in the evening, especially if there's a tad of wind blowing, because fleece is quite thin and you have trouble holding it down. But so far, so good. I think I've got to go out there again tonight, because as I understand from the records, it was the longest period of continued frost from the 10th of April through to the 25th. But there we go. It's been an extraordinary year. Weeding. I think you mentioned weeding, Sue, and that is what I've been doing a lot of. As soon as the little blighters come up, we try to get rid of them, because it's best to get rid of the roots. Yeah, get rid of the tops, but get rid of the roots so they don't come back so quickly. So that's an ongoing task.
Weeding in my garden, it's ground elder. And I know that ground elder hates being moved or touched. So just had to keep digging up the roots as much as possible. But I can never, ever get on top of it. I do my best every year, and I keep it low, but the roots just go on and on and on. I don't know if ground elder is in your garden, Trevor.
I haven't got too much of it, I have to say. It's probably the different terrain. I mean, whether it's anything to do by being near water or whatever, I don't know. But I haven't got too much of that at all. As soon as I see something of that nature, I'm digging it deep, trying to dig it out. Always reminds me a little bit of horseradish.
Yes.
Because that has got its taper, really does go right down, and it's difficult. You might just chop it off, but it is so resilient that it will come back again. Yes, we've done that. And we have repotted cabbage seedlings, which was the first ones to come up. So they've come out of their modular trays, and I put them into larger pots, 6 to a pot. And that will be their last transfer from a pot until they will actually go out in the ground. They've probably got about 3 to 4 true leaves. And you normally wait until they've got 5 to 6 true leaves, harden them off, which I have been. I've just started that. And then we find a place in the garden. And talking about finding a place in the garden, I have marked out where I want things to go so that I don't inadvertently put something in a place where I'd earmarked it for something else. So it's a good idea to mark out your plot roughly and then try to stick with it, because it helps with rotation the following year. One thing I was really pleased about the other day was I'd overwintered dahlias, and it's fortunate that I had put little markers in to denote the colour of them, into pots, into the greenhouse, wrapped with newspaper. And I had watered them, as I learned from the web. You learn these things, you're picking up information all the time. And I noticed that there was actually some green signs of life. There was some green shoots coming up, which is, you think, it's done its job. So they will stay there for another couple of weeks, and then I will plant them out into the main garden. I said I erected the peat structure, which was quite straightforward. I've also erected 2 wigwams for my French beans. I shall have a total of 4 wigwams by the end of June, when I put the last 2 French beans in. And they're looking pretty good. I had to protect them a little bit from the wind last night, but that's the way it goes. They are beginning to show signs in the greenhouse of coming through. It's far too, it won't, but they won't be going out until probably the end of the month. In about 2 weeks' time, I will start sowing runner beans. Otherwise, you'll end up with a glut of French beans and a glut of runner beans at the same time. Although I do, as you well know, I do give a lot away. So the French beans are coming on well and truly, and I put 9 canes round to each wigwam, It's just a judgment of how wide they are. I suppose it's about a foot roughly. And then you just put the canes in equal distance and then bring them together and tie them round the top so that they're secure with the middle stake in the middle or the middle cane. And hopefully that will do the trick for the French beans. Now, the runner beans will be a bit different because I have one row of about 15 foot, 20 foot long. It's not an art. You just get used to doing what you do. I think that takes about 40 canes and I end up growing over 120 beans because I have two beans to each cane. What a lot of people do is sow directly into the ground. Now, that's absolutely fine, and you would do that a little later than those that go into the pots. But then they're likely to be or could be attacked from insects and other predators and even mice. Although people think it's only peas they attack, they could attack beans as well. I prefer to grow them in the greenhouse and then put them out, which means that, like peas, you water by each cane, get a dibber, dip it in so it's nice and squelchy, and then drop your plant into there. Gives them a good head start.
Lovely.
What else have I been doing? The trouble is you do things all the time.
Yeah.
And you have to make a note of what you're doing so you don't want to double up. As I said, mowing, I had mowed the lawns for the first time with the motor mower. I had got it prepped earlier, started it up and whatever, and oiled it and done one or two other things. The main thing with a motor mower is to use a wire brush, take the spark plug out, give that a good seeing to, put it back in, and normally that does it for my mower. And my mower is a quadcast, which someone kindly gave me at a very knockdown price as they were going to take it to a local auction. They'd had enough of it. And I said, don't do that.
Yeah.
I want that. And the rest is history. And that was over 12 years ago. And it really has been a good servant because it is a proper cylinder mower. If you like, it is one that leaves stripes. If you like stripes, yes, absolutely. Although what I did do, and I've learned this from many years ago, is I threw the grass, first of all. In other words, I didn't collect it into the grass collector. I threw it because I cut the grass quite high, although, to be fair, the grass hasn't grown as quickly as it normally would at this time of year in previous years because we haven't had the rain. But we did throw that. The second time I cut it, I did actually collect the grass. But it's no good cutting it too low because the grass is not there. It needs to strengthen itself up a bit. And those cuttings went onto the compost and the cycle starts again. But I always think a lawn looks better. You can cut it, but if you have got edges to your lawn, make sure at the same time you edge it with edging shears because it looks nice and crisp and tidy. Okay, a lot of people don't like nice and crisp and tidy lawns. I do, so that is why I do it.
I thought I'd read somewhere that if you mowed your lawn and left the cuttings on the lawn, that it could reseed itself, or is that just something rather silly?
I think it can reseed, and that's why you do it the first cut.
Yes.
Normally. You don't do it all through the cutting season. It's normally, if you're going to do it, you know it, do it on the first cut, because you're cutting quite high. You're not throwing loads and loads of grass on the lawn and then you'll walk across it, and because it might be a bit damp, you'll pick it all up on your shoes, won't you? That's no idea at all.
Is it this time of the year when you put down the weed cut killer on lawns for moss, etc.?
Weed moss and feed. Yeah, I have decided not to do it in the spring this year, because you can do spring and autumn feed because there hasn't been the rain. I haven't got the moss, and I think, well, it's going to be a lot of effort and you're not going to get too much reward for it. So what I will do is I will weed and feed with the appropriate material in the autumn, and I may give it another scarify in the autumn, just clear things out. We'll see how it thickens up.
Have you already scarified this year?
I'd done a little bit of scarifying. I hadn't done the front one, but I did a little bit of scarifying just to make sure my scarifier worked, I suppose. It didn't go too deep. It's not the most expensive of scarifiers I've got. It's just got the wire tines on the front, but it's an electric one. It does what I want it to do. It does get rid of what is known as the thatch, which is the dead grass that lays over winter. And what is a good idea about scarifying is it gets rid of that kind of material so it doesn't lay dormant over the winter months, and therefore it could harbor diseases. So it's a good idea to give it a light one at least once a year. But if you can give it a heavier one every 2 or 3 years, that's fine. You normally do it in the autumn. When my days of doing cricket pitches, it was you scarified after the end of the season, you scarified and then you loamed and you seeded all in the space of a weekend.
Right.
And then you put the, if you like, the cricket square to bed for the winter until the very early spring, and then you go out and give it a light cut. So it was scarify, loam, seed. And that's what you really should think about. I'm not saying necessarily loam, because you can get specialist other soil as well in garden centres that you do the same kind of principle with your own garden, with your own lawns. And of course, the other thing is to actually say, what kind of traffic do you have on your lawns? If you're going to sit and admire it from a distance, then you will want to spend a bit of money on it. But if you're having kids running around on it, which is absolutely fabulous, but it's going to scuff up the lawns. But that's what a lawn's there for, isn't it? To be played on. So you wouldn't want probably to spend so much money on it.
Okay, well, we'll take a break now and then we'll go come back for part two after the break. Bear with us.
Okay.
Welcome back with Trevor for Trevor's Monthly Gardening Diary. Now you're going to continue with April. You said you were Trevor.
I've got a lovely bench on the deck in, which is a lighter wood, and I like to clean that down and then to not so much stain it, but it's the proper varnish. And it's surprising how it's not that takes the length of time, it's the decking that takes the time. But you get these brushes that you buy to go with the decking thing to brush in, but it never seems to get always into the grooves you want to go into. So I take my time, I get on my hands and knees. This is all exercise, and I do it by hand. I enjoy doing it, simple as that. I think that now concludes for April.
Okay,
Because
well, we'll.
it's a continuation of sowing. So some of the things, Sue, are what you've done 1 week, you're doing very similar the next week. You're weeding all the time, you're doing it. So some of it is repetitive. Latter part of March and April are possibly the most busiest times, certainly from a vegetable point of view. The flowers element of it is normally a little later, obviously after all frost pass and whatever. And I'm, of course, now I'm going to start off with flowers and peonies. I needed to see when they were all coming up, and they're up about a foot now. So that is when I put canes round them, and I put the first string round the canes. So the idea is I will do them about 6 inches, 9 inches apart as they go up the cane. I mean, the peonies don't grow up the canes, but they need to be encased in a cage kind of thing to avoid, it helps to avoid wind rock, because whenever my peonies come out, so do the winds. And as you well know, peonies have lovely big flower heads, but they do drop their petals quite quickly at the slightest touch of a bit of wind. So I've started all of that. I marked out the brassica area, as I've said. I've removed all my early purple sprouting stalks, cut the leaves up into the compost, and cut the actual stalks. They're too woody to go into the compost bin. But the other delightful thing last month, April, we picked the first, or pulled is the terminology, pulled the first rhubarb. And that was delightful. In theory, you shouldn't really pull rhubarb after July, because it then becomes a little bit woody. But at this time, April, May, and June, it really is a delight. You don't have to do much with rhubarb. The only thing you have to do in the winter is to put probably some compost all around the crowns, because it dies down naturally. All you have to ever do is take away the old spent leaves, and they will show you they're spent because they don't look very nice. But once they start going off, and then suddenly all you're left with is the crowns. And as I say, in the winter, you could probably do it in the autumn as well, you put a dressing of compost over there. Every 5 or 7 years, so it is recommended, is that you dig a crown up and you split it. So you make it stronger, and you can plant the, you may be able to split one or two or more, but then you replant it. So you've created another rhubarb plant. And they, as I say, don't need any looking after. And it always amazes me when I'm shopping in the supermarkets how much rhubarb is to buy. But then that is choice. But leave it in. And the thing about rhubarb, it always seems to grow in people's gardens at the bottom of the garden. Now, why that is, I don't know. But that seems to be history, doesn't it?
Yes, but rhubarb is lovely. I adore rhubarb.
Well, especially if you make delicious dishes with it.
Yes, rhubarb crumble, rhubarb tart, absolutely gorgeous.
Well,
with cream or custard, doesn't matter which, or delightful.
Well, I'd say it doesn't matter which, I would say both. all courgettes have gone in and I've repotted them, and so is my one thing that I haven't grown for many, many a year, and that's marrow. Obviously, you can't tell much difference between the two plants at the moment, but you will with the fruits that come off of them, hopefully. Well, a courgette is really only a small marrow, or a marrow is just a large courgette, to be honest. Now, the one thing I was going to be talking about was dampening off. And I'm mentioning it now because as we're putting plants from one area into another area, especially the small ones, and repotting them, dampening off can occur at, I say, any time. And it's so frustrating. There's not really a cure. It's basically a soil-borne diseases. And if you start picking them up by the stem, they don't like that, and you'll put it into another pot, and come the morning, I know it takes a bit of time to settle down, come the morning, it's just flopped over. It's saying, I don't want to grow here, so I shall just flop over. And it's so frustrating, and that's known as dampening off. So you have to be careful when you transfer a smaller plant into a bigger pot. That's all I shall say. Try to avoid picking it up by the stem. That's why it's always useful to have a little spatula and pick as much soil from the bottom of with the roots as possible when you're putting it into its new home. I think we've now concluded April, as far as I can see, Sue.
Good. So what's on your list now for May?
The first thing that will be on my list, and it always brings a smile to me face when I do it, is I put my runner bean poles up. It's like there's a statement to say we're going into summer. So they will go up in the next week, weather permitting. Now we've had the rain, it'd be easy to get them in. I normally use, as I'm not very tall, it's no good having the tallest canes available and putting them in because you won't reach the top of the bean poles. So I use about 7 foot bean poles, and I don't use wigwams for runner beans. I like the old way of just doing it in rows. They call it the A shape. So you put across and across the other way, and then strengthening cane across the top. And then affix in that same order canes across and under, and then tie in with string or twine. Make sure it's firm. I learned a lesson 3 years ago because I had this long row. It looked lovely. And I had a couple of different varieties, but we had very strong winds this particular year, unseasonal, because obviously beans are in the summer. And I had a collapso. My runner bean row collapsed. And I thought, I'm not doing all this hard work for nothing. So I decided to split the row into two and then put strengthening stakes. They were big dahlia stakes, actually, plus 2x2 paving slabs at each end. So I had four paving slabs, two on each row, and that seemed to do the trick the last few years. So I'm quite pleased with myself. So that's what we will be doing. Earth up potatoes. Now, earthing up is, by definition, is just drawing soil up over the foliage. I will come on to one of the questions I think I was asked was actually, what does earthing up mean? Well, it basically means that when your foliage is growing up through the soil and it gets higher and higher, when it gets roughly, not, don't get a measuring stick out, when it gets roughly about 9 inches tall, you need to draw some soil around it. So you reduce the height to about 5 or 6 inches. I mean, it will continue to grow, of course. But what that does do is A, it stabilizes it, and B, any potatoes that start to grow, you've covered them up. And in future, because green potatoes are poisonous, and you don't want to lose any potatoes due to the fact that you haven't covered them with earth. So when it gets on to even a more latter stage, it's in the next couple of months, you'll be looking to make sure that no potatoes are showing to the air, to the sunlight, and just go around and cover them up. But that's what earthing up is. And it's you loosen the soil between the rows and then get what is known as a draw hoe, which I think self-explanatory, but you draw it to you, and then you draw the soil up around this foliage. And that foliage, I don't know if I have mentioned, it is known as a hallum, is 9 inches roughly tall, then you earth up.
Yep.
That's the earthing up of the potatoes. I don't do that with my first earlies, because first earlies are normally quite quick. And plus the fact they're in big tubs, so it's easy to cover. Continue the succession growing in May. As I've said, these things will become a bit repetitive. So there will be more radish going in, more carrots, more spring onions, more lettuce. I've put more lettuce into a trough recently. The main lettuce goes in the garden, and the pick and come again one is in two troughs. Peonies, so you ensure you encase them with another wrap-round of string. Plant out overwintered dahlias. Yeah, as mentioned earlier, they will go out at towards the end of May into the garden. These are the ones that don't go into my tubs. But what I will be doing in May, and you will appreciate this, is that I shall be removing the foliage in my tubs, the daffodils, and whatever was growing there over the winter, the tulips, pansies. And I will then save the bulbs, dry them out, save them, and use them again next year. I'm not tight, but that's what happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I shall remove, I've got some large tubs, and then I shall remove the top third of the compost, and I will put that into the compost bin, and I will top up with fresh compost. Apart from the begonias that will need to go down a few inches, everything else that I've got growing in the greenhouse will actually be more or less put on top. Gazanias, peonies, geraniums, they will just all sit round. That's to name a few because my memory's going now, but I've got a few more. And yeah. You decide what the heights of the plants are. So you don't want to be precise, but you don't want all the tall ones around the outside and the small ones in the middle, because that will, but you don't have to be too precise. But make sure that you get a pattern to what you're going to do by just taking the pots or taking the plugs or whatever you're going to do and just set them out and look back and think, yeah, that doesn't look bad, before you actually take them out of their containers and put them in. That would be my advice anyway.
Good.
It'll be time to put out the brassicas in May, and the brassicas being the cabbage, Brussels, and the last one that will go in will be the early purple sprouting. But What you need to do is to, you don't dig over that area that had a previous crop in last year. Don't dig it over because you want the ground firm. Brassicas like firm ground. So you actually do a little bit of, you can do a bit of stomping on the ground to tread it down, and then you rake it, and then you mark out the rows. And then decide how far width. Cabbages need a smaller width than Brussels, obviously. And then you water up through there first, the row, and then put a dibber in. Because by that time, you see, it'd be so hard, you wouldn't be able to put a dibber into dry soil. So you put a dibber in, mark out, dibber, mark out. And then before you plant and you've hardened them off, you actually fill the holes up again with water. So you're trying to make it as easy as possible to get as deep as, well, relatively deep with the dibber, and it's easier if you've got water into it. And once you've done and firmed it in, I use a dibber, you firm them in so that they're hardy, stand upright, and then you've obviously got to consider, what have I got in the shed, probably from last year before, netting to cover it from birds. That all is to do. Because I don't know quite what netting I've got, but that is during the course of May. It all doesn't happen at the same time, but it's during the course of May.
Lovely. Okay, well, let's just have a little break there for a minute, Trevor, and then we'll carry on in part three. So just bear with us, please. Welcome back to part three of Trevor's Monthly Gardening Diary. And Trevor's just going to finish up with a bit of May, and then we've got some questions. So fire away, Trevor.
Indeed, I shall. One of the important things, certainly at the beginning of May, do not think that frost is behind you now. It's behind you. It's not behind you. It can be late nips. Well, I think we're going to have one very shortly, but it can go on for a couple of weeks. Not every night, and it won't be severe, but it could be enough to damage any delicates. So don't throw your fleece or whatever away. Keep it handy until next week or week after, depending on the weather forecast. So you just keep an eye on that. There's obviously watering as well, which I've watered more in April than I think I ever have done, especially the pots, because you just don't want to let them dry out. And obviously, with April showers as a rule, this wouldn't be required. In fact, my water butts, well, hopefully not now, but my water butts, and I've got seven, were all empty. But that's a shame. Going on to growing things, I will be growing some more French beans. When they start appearing in the greenhouse for these two wigwams, then I will consider a week after all of that is to put another batch in, and then I'll do another wigwam at a time so that it covers all the way through to September. I mean, French beans can go on, depending again on the weather, through to October. So you just don't want a glut. It's lovely freezing stuff to you have a glut and you freeze some. But personally, now I'd sooner give it away to people as opposed to freeze it, because you always end up, and it's not with spare ones in the freezer like I have now. And it's never the same as picking it straight out the ground or plucking it off the boughs or anything of that nature. So we try to eke it out to the end of September. And this year, which is coming up nicely, along with what I said about the brassicas, it's kale. Now we're going to see what happens with kale. I was reminded that a few years ago I grew some chard. Now, I think it's too late. I will have a look to grow some chard. But what a delight that was. It wasn't too bad. I couldn't take to it quite myself, but it was multicoloured. And it's a delight to have it in the garden. But you've obviously got to sacrifice something else if you're going to grow another, unless you unless I take up more lawn, which I don't propose to do.
I do like chard. I think it's delicious. And also pak choi. Have you ever tried growing pak choi?
I had tried last year. It, to me, it didn't quite come out as what it said on the front of the packet. And that's probably more down to me than anything that the packet said. So I've still got some seeds. I try not to use older seeds more than I have to, but a year old is normally fine. I will have a look and see if it's not, I don't know, it's not too late, blimey, it's only end of April, isn't it, beginning of May. I will have a look and I will try and see if I can grow some. I don't know how much space it needs. It does look nice. What do you have it with then?
I just use it as another green vegetable.
I can't recall whether I had enough success last year to have a meal with it. We will try that. As I've said before, you just need to try something different every year. The problem is you either have shorter rows or shorter spacings for these plants, or you don't grow something. It all depends how it is, because not every year is good for one. Might be good one year, might not be good the next year. You don't know. You just don't know.
Yeah.
So that, I think, concludes what I should be doing in May. Now, I shall probably think of a whole host of other things when I finish, but that is what it is currently.
Okay. Now, I believe you've got some questions there.
I have. Now, the first question was talking about thinning out. Now, thinning out, when you've probably oversowed in the first place, to be honest, and you need to thin out to ensure that not a lot of plants are fighting for the nutrients and the space. There is one exception to this, and that is probably carrots, and I'll come on to that next. Once they're big enough to handle, one of the classic examples is beetroot, because no matter how hard we try to sow thinly, it doesn't all necessarily occur. So when they start coming up, you can then, as I say, when they're ripe to handle, just pick them up gently, probably preferably after it's been raining, because what you don't want to do is leave anything in the ground, and just gently tease it out. And that will allow the other seedling to expand to its size, and yet they're not in competition with each other. And I will probably need to do that with the parsnip if they do arrive, if they do come up, we don't know. That is thinning out. It can prevent certain diseases with things being close together. Try to do it. It might look a little bare for a start. It's the same with lettuces. You thin lettuces out, because if you don't thin lettuces out and they're very small seeds, then you will end up with small lettuces. Whereas you could have one, you could end up with about four or five little ones. And that is, well, you don't want that sitting in the kitchen, do you? So lettuces is a strong one as well. Now, what I was saying about carrots, because one of the main detractors to carrots is the carrot fly. And if you do thin out, that attracts the carrot fly. And that's why I said carrot was the exception. So you do try to grow as thinly as possible in your drills. Now, having said that, if you are growing in containers, try to ensure that your container is 60 centimetres off the ground. Now, this, I am told, is the maximum height of where carrot fly flies. So if you've got something above that height, you won't be, as a rule, you will not be attacked, or your carrots be attacked with carrot fly.
Good.
And try not with taller plants around. Apparently, that attracts them as well. So apart from that, you should be all right, because carrot fly, what they do, they're like, I hate to say this, they're like little maggots, and they just attack and bore holes in the roots. So it's obviously worse towards the latter part of the year than it is the early. And that's why I tend to plant carrots, succession carrots, early in the season as opposed to later, because that is when it becomes more of a problem. So that is carrot fly. The other thing was, when do I sow runner beans? Well, I may have touched on this, but unless you want a glut, don't try to have French beans and runner beans maximum at the same time. But obviously, frost, you don't want to plant runner beans until all risk of frost is gone. Now, if you're sowing indoors, you can start sowing runner beans now in pots, but I would leave it a little longer for those in the ground. They will probably come up stronger than those in pots, because they're coming up through natural ground. And what they will have to sink down into, if you've done it properly, is a reservoir that when you've dug out your trench, either in January, February, or in autumn, you would have put in newspaper, this, that, and the other, potato peelings, any peelings, and then you water it and put some mulch over it or compost. So it's like a reservoir for the roots to grow down into. I do it in the greenhouse, so I wouldn't put those in for another week or so, two weeks, more or less towards the end of the month. So that's runner beans. When you put your canes up, how many runner beans should I grow? Well, as a rule, I grow two beans per cane. So if I've got 40 canes, I need probably 80 to 100, because what you've got to realise is you're not going to probably have all 80 beans come up. If you plant 80, not all 80 are going to come up. So you need some in reserve. And you can put, if you're growing them in the ground, you put them at the end of the rows so that you've got them there. So it's no problem at all. You want your beans to be growing all, well, not all at the same time, but if you've got a particular variety, you want them all to be coming up at the same time. So you don't want to be adding beans later on because they're playing catch up. Having said that, again, I'll contradict myself. There are, nowadays, you can go into a garden centre and get these packs of runner beans if you don't want to do all that hassle. And you can just get a strip, and more or less they are in strips, of runner beans. I don't know quite how many there are. They're not really that expensive, but it saves, again, the initial bit of germination, the compost and whatever. Depends what you want out of your gardening. I enjoy all that. That's all part of the process. I listened the other day to someone on the radio, and he said there are no laborious jobs in the garden. He said, I'd sooner not use a machine or whatever, apart from a lawnmower, to do certain jobs, because that's the joy of it. And it's therapeutic. And that's the word he kept using, was therapeutic. And I totally agree. If you've got the time, enjoy it. And one guy was saying that he had seats all around his garden because he said, that's what we do not do. We do not spend enough time sitting down and looking at your garden. And I totally concur with that.
So you are retired, Trevor. But when you were working, did you do all of this when you were working?
Yeah, and I was probably, certainly the latter part where I was working a long way, not just up the road, but I was working a long way away, is that I wouldn't come in from the garden to about, well, certainly in the summer, when the sun was going down, and then I was having something to eat at 9:30, 10:00.
Yeah.
That wasn't right, but you knew no different. Mm. And there's more things that I can do, I'd say slowly. That's why I'm growing some different things, because I've got more time to do it. That's why I had another greenhouse. So you've got time to do it. You don't have to run around.
Yeah.
Certain things you do. But I know what you're saying, Sue. It was difficult when I retired. I thought, well, I'm going to have all this time. Well, no, I haven't.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what everybody says, don't they? Where is the time? But that's why I help other people.
Okay, so are those all the questions, Trevor?
Yes, it was, yes. Because right. I'd answered a couple of other ones in the course of going through the May and the April.
Well, thank you very much, Trevor. We'll be with you again at the beginning of June. And let's hope there'll be no more frosts, the weather will improve, and that the garden starts to look lush.
Oh, absolutely. And we'll be reaping the benefits. With the sun on our backs, we'll be reaping the benefits. It's been a pleasure, so it really has.
Okay. Thank you very much, Trevor. Bye for now. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.